E.T. Phone Home.
I'm just having some brewski beers at my Mojo Dojo Casa house.
Wendy, I'm home.
There's no place like home.
I'm home!
Welcome to the House of Cinema podcast. I am your host, Joe Aragon. With me today, Sydney Volpe. And in the house today, a discussion on Civil War. Team Cap or Team Iron Man? Which one are you, Sid?
Ooh, well, that's America's ass, Joe.
No, not a discussion on the MCU Civil War. On A24, Alex Garland's Civil War, the recent release to hit theaters, kind of caused a lot of discussions on several different levels. I am very excited to talk about it. We both saw this movie back in Austin at South by Southwest at its premiere. Since then, I've seen it twice. You've also seen it twice, right?
You've seen it twice since then, or you've seen it twice total?
I've seen it twice total.
Okay, that's what I'm going to say.
Okay.
We watched it.
How is, we'll get into like how you're feeling second time around, but, you know, Civil War, not to like be on the nose, it's kind of consumed the world right now, you know?
Ooh.
People are talking about Civil War. People are loving it. People are hating it. Not a lot of people in the middle. Like, you either get like the really extremes on both sides. Are you kind of experiencing the same thing?
Yes. What a reflection of the movie itself. I mean, I personally felt like I fell more in the middle compared to most people. And I know you and Claire both like actively really loved it. And then, yeah, there are people on the other side that just hated it, foundationally disagreed with what the film was trying to do. And I mean, this is the real deal polarizing. It's not who should have won, Godzilla or Kong.
Like, yeah,
there are some really heated discussions about this movie.
I know. We're going to have to do our best and try to once again step outside of our bubble and try to understand how is the greater audience reacting to this, because you and I are chronically online. We see all of the very aggressive Twitter takes on both sides of the aisle, you know, the pro and the anti-Civil War discussions. But I'm really kind of excited to get your stories on when you went to see it a second time and kind of what you think the general population is reacting to. Before we get into any of that, of course, as usual, I will give the disclaimer. This episode will contain spoilers for the movie Civil War. If you're looking for a non-spoiler review, may want to watch the movie and come back. If you don't mind, then press on. Sydney, Civil War, a movie that has done very well for A24 right now. It's their highest grossing movie for an opening weekend ever. Their first time ever being the top at the box office. You've seen it twice. The second time you saw it, tell me about that experience. Because the first time we saw it was at a festival. The second time you saw it was not at a festival. Are you feeling like general population out there is kind of being receptive to Civil War? Like, what's the vibe out there?
Yes, I think they are. I said on one of our Patreon episodes, I know a movie's probably gonna do well with audiences if my family is asking about it, because they're aware, they're in the know, they're like really, their interest is really piqued by what the movie is about. And of course, in the US, it's like, there's a movie about a US Civil War. It's so timely. People are going to be curious. But I think that, I mean, it's getting good ratings. It seems like audiences are really liking it and they're showing up. I mean, it's crazy how well it performed at the box office.
Yeah.
And my second showing was, I mean, practically completely sold out. And I did see it at an Alamo. I know like some other chain theaters, maybe not as many people were going to the, you know, prime time 8 p.m. weekend showings, but mine was totally packed and the crowd was definitely pretty into it.
Wow.
What about your, well, you saw it at like another early.
Yeah. Screening. Both my experiences were not the best in terms of trying to understand if the audience is reacting well to it. Cause I saw it at South by Southwest. I will always be excited to see movies at a festival, but definitely I try to take many reactions, including my own reaction, with a grain of salt. Then I saw it a second time at a press screening, but it was a very big press screening. Like, they invited, you know, everybody. It wasn't just like the local press. It was, you know, people just in the movie space. And it was at the TCL Chinese Theater. So huge theater, huge screen, huge sound. And the reactions were, again, pretty positive. People walking out were like, I think, pleasantly surprised. There were definitely a few people who were like on the fence and some people who didn't like it. But I would say overall, from what I gathered of the vibe, I didn't like poll everybody as they were walking out, but I got the vibe that most people kind of fucked with it. I guess we can kind of use this to segue into the Rotten Tomatoes score currently. Mm-hmm. The consensus for Civil War reads as follows. Tough and unsettling by design, Civil War is a gripping close-up look at the violent uncertainty of life in a nation in crisis. Currently, wow. The critic score sits at an 82%. Audience score a 77%. Do either of these scores surprise you?
I don't know if I'm surprised, per se, that the audience score is lower than the critic score.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I would maybe think the audience score would be higher than a 77. Does it surprise you?
You know, the 77 isn't shocking to me. What is more shocking is the 82%, because I feel like, and this could just be my bubble of critics that I follow, but a lot of the people that I tend to go to when I look at the reviews or I want to see what they thought, many of them, I think, were on the fence to not liking it. So the 82% is more indicative to me, like, oh, critics are apparently like this more than I thought. You know, audiences, I kind of assume they would at least like it. But the critic score, you know, 82% of the critics who give this movie a review at least rated it positively, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, it got a B- cinema score too, which is just like audiences walking out getting polled. So it's been a tough one to nail down. It's, you know, it's kind of a coin flip what people are going to think.
Well, I think it definitely is a coin flip, but it's so funny because, like I said, you know, we spend so much time on the internet. Like, there are so many people who, like, fervently and passionately hate this movie. And then you kind of step out from the online discourse and you're like, oh, most people are liking it and kind of walking out enjoying it. I haven't checked the Letterboxd score in a while, but last time I checked, it was at like a solid 3.8, I believe.
Oh, wow.
Which is really good for an average.
Really,
you know,
good.
It's pretty high, which I think is also interesting. For those who don't know, Civil War, I'll give you a brief summary on the movie. According to IMDb, Civil War is a journey across a dystopian future America following a team of military-embedded journalists as they race against time to reach D.C. before rebel factions descend upon the White House. The movie stars Kirsten Dunst, Wagner Moura, Kaylee Spaney, Stephen McKinley Henderson, and Nick Offerman. I think we're ready to talk about the movie, maybe. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's let's do it.
okay. Civil War. You've seen it twice. The first time you walked out, you mentioned that you were kind of in the middle. I have not gotten your reaction the second time around. Kind of tell me your reaction walking out the second time.
Oh, that is true. I kind of didn't follow up with you and Clara because I think I was a little bit even less sure of how I felt about the movie after my second watch. And when we saw it at South by Southwest at the premiere, the movie ended and I was like, I liked so much of that. Like, my overall feeling was like, it really feels like there's something missing, but there's definitely something there, uh-huh. You know? And I just wasn't sure why I felt maybe a little bit emotionally disconnected from the film. And yet, like, riveted by certain parts of it. And I think that certain sequences were so well executed. And on my second watch, this was after I had consumed a lot of different perspectives from people I follow and critics I love, and tried to take that into the film and kind of look at it from different angles. And there were parts I liked more and there were parts I liked less. And so I almost ended up at the same place that I was before. And I'll always go back to Pauline Kael's quote about how the feeling you feel when you watch a movie for the first time is probably the one that's most true to yourself. And even if you rewatch a movie, you'll probably feel mostly the same. But it was interesting to kind of look at those things with what I had kind of learned and gleaned from what other people thought. I'm trying to avoid like getting into the really specific parts of it. But I'll say that. And then why don't you say how you felt
the second time around?
The second time, yeah.
I think I'm like in the exact same boat as you. I went in liking the movie already. I mean, like you mentioned, I walked out of South by Southwest overall feeling really strong about the movie. I didn't think it was perfect, but I think overall it did work for me. So I went into my second screening kind of knowing, okay, it worked for me the first time. And I don't think there's an issue at all reading different people's perspectives and interpretations and kind of considering their point of views. I think that's always really good and healthy for, you know, movie watching and especially for film criticism. So I walked into my second showing kind of with all of that in my back pocket. And I walked out not really feeling any differently. I think there were some scenes I liked more, like you said. Mm-hmm. There were some scenes I liked less. There were some portions of dialogue I kind of noticed more and thought was a little bit more cringy. And some dialogue I never noticed before and thought it was good. So I agree in the sense that like I wasn't unchanged my first time. I still feel like the movie is successful in what I thought it was trying to do. I say that with an asterisk because I feel like every time Alex Garland opens his mouth about the movie, I'm liking it less.
Bro, you're making it really hard for me to keep fighting for you.
I know we both have some thoughts on that as well, but he's definitely made it difficult for me to defend in a way to people who hate the movie. So my feelings on it haven't really changed. I think it is a really well-made movie. I've always really liked Alex Garland's work as a director, minus Men, and we'll get more into his filmography maybe a little bit later. But I want to kind of transition to what audiences are reacting to, because I did pull a few of the negative reviews from the Rotten Tomato score, which, okay, to remind everybody, is 77%. The reviews I pulled that were like one star, two star, half stars, someone said, Civil War is a very poor executed film. The story feels very basic and bland. You could honestly watch the trailers and get a summarized version of the story. The action pieces could have been better, but are meaningless due to the poor storytelling. There's no punctuation in any of that portion of what I just read. So sorry if I was stumbling. There is not a comma or period.
It's a run-on sentence.
Someone else put, overall a bad movie. Very disappointed. Bad acting, very little story. No explanation at all of why there was a civil war. Some obviously bad CGI. Meh. That is their reaction. Huh. But these two reviews make me want to ask you a couple questions. One, how do you feel this movie is in compared to its trailer? Are you feeling happy that you were kind of duped? Are you feeling frustrated that you were kind of duped? Because that seems to be affecting people's reaction to this movie.
Wow. I think that's a really great question, because I think it's what the whole argument is kind of hinging on right now. Like, the people who have issues with it, so many of them are saying, I wish there was more context. And I do think that A24 has been marketing it. And, you know, when you watch the trailer, it seems like it's going to be a really heated, like, right versus left look at like a really modern state of American politics. Mm-hmm. And A24 is really leaning into the California Texas alliance, and like, here's how the country is broken up into different factions.
Yeah. But that's not what kind of American are you?
I'm so glad you put that in there. What kind? He scratching the side of his face. What kind of American are you?
What kind of American are you?
No, you're right, though. They're completely leaning into that whole shtick.
And it's simply not what the movie is really about.
Is that bad or good?
Well, I think that here's the thing. I actually don't think this movie is apolitical. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also what a lot of people are saying. Oh, my God, it's apolitical. Like, Alex Garland doesn't do anything political. But it's not. I mean, it could never be apolitical. Mm-hmm. But I think that it does refrain from political specifics. And I think for me, I almost maybe felt disconnected to it because it didn't feel like it, our America. Mm. And I think my feeling was like, I live in DC. I see so much shit go on here. So many marches about really specific things. And it almost did feel like that was like the heart that was like missing. And that maybe Garland didn't take a stance. I'm not saying that a film has to take a stance, but I think a lot of people found that cowardly. And I don't think I find it cowardly, but it did just feel like it was like something was just absent. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, well, we're in the thick of it now, and I'm really glad you kind of used this to kind of jump into what I think mainly is what everybody's going to be wanting to listen to any podcast about, is like, oh, what are their feelings about how this movie tackles the politics of what they initially were marketing? Because they were pushing this very big, oh, look at this movie. It's called Civil War. The trailer's really focused on like this this right versus left mentality. Look at this world. It's in this like, it's a dystopian world, but it's kind of implying like this is a world of what it, that would be if Donald Trump was president. You know, there's like all of these lines of dialogue scattered through the trailer that's like...
they shoot journalists on sight in the Capitol.
It's like a lot of very provocative imagery and dialogue to get people to like ears perk up and want to watch the movie. And then you watch the movie, and I agree to the extent of what you're saying that the movie may not be apolitical. I think there are levels and degrees to something's apoliticism. And I think that you can't, nothing is like completely void of a politics perspective or interpretation or politics at all. I think movies and art in general is inherently political. So like, I don't think even a movie like Civil War can be vacant of politics. I think there is a level of apoliticism in the movie because it does, you know, refuse to put a foot down on either side and kind of say, you know, what is right or wrong in their, you know, the filmmaker's perspective. Whether or not that works or not, I think is really what is the crux of the debate right now. Everybody's kind of yelling at each other from both sides saying like, oh, it's a good thing he didn't want to take a hard stand. Some people are saying it's cowardly. And like, I'm kind of sitting in this weird position of like, I understand why he did it. I think it's odd for him to like not take a stance, but also kind of co-opt images from our very real reality that's obviously political. Language like Antifa massacre and, you know, like bring up other
states. Just leave it hanging.
Yeah, and just kind of leave it hanging, but not actually address it. I find that really strange. How much do you feel like Alex Garland not being American factors into this?
Well, that is fascinating too. And I think it's good context in case anyone who's listening hasn't seen it. The film is about war journalists and war photographers. And so that's kind of the angle that Alex Garland took here. He said that he wanted to make a movie where the journalists are the heroes. And he really liked this old fashioned form of journalism that was really tried to be objective and tried to be neutral and kind of tried to let the images speak for themselves. And I think as you said, like he's been saying a lot about the movie that people are like, I feel like, you know, I personally don't agree with this. I feel like this contradicts what's actually shown in the film. And yeah, I mean, he's made statements that make it pretty clear that he's a centrist. Like he's made statements like basically, you know, we shouldn't be fighting at all. We should all be like coming together. And at the end of the day, we should all be willing to sit down together and have a conversation over dinner. And I think people really take issue with that because especially in the wake of Trump's presidency, when reproductive rights and trans rights are being threatened, people are like, no, there are things that people are doing that are ethically wrong. And I'm not willing to sit down and have a conversation with someone who thinks that. And so I do think that's like a uniquely American point of contention right now that people are not taking well to. And yeah, Alex Garland, and I don't agree with Alex Garland on that front at all. And I think it is interesting that he's not actually from the US. And I think that's another really fascinating part of this is that I think that Americans are also a little bit self-absorbed and a little bit myopic. And I think we view politics, like global politics, through the lens of American politics. And when you travel the world, you see that like, right versus left doesn't mean the same thing everywhere. And like Republican doesn't mean the same thing everywhere. And so I do think it's interesting to see how the perspective of someone from that who is not from here is impacting that discourse in the US. I mean, how do you think it kind of comes into play?
Well, I think you said it perfectly in the sense that like we alluded to it earlier, but every time Alex Garland has said more about this movie and kind of more press junket interviews are coming out, I'm finding myself slowly kind of crawling to the corner of the room and like hiding in the shadows because I'm like, I was interpreting this very differently from what you were intending, clearly. And yeah, I think being a centrist, you know, as someone who is from the UK and being a centrist, I wouldn't be surprised if to him that makes sense. And I think to like most people outside the US, that seems like a very fantastical and like, yeah, of course we should all sit down. But you know, when you look at American politics and what's going on in the world, like you said, there are so many things that we shouldn't be sitting down and just kind of like talking it out with the other person. There are things that we need to take a hard stance to ensure that people's livelihoods and and their rights are protected. And so when he says things like, I was trying to make this like centrist perspective and journalism be like the shining truth in the movie, it's frustrating. It's so frustrating because when I was watching the movie, I didn't take his like apoliticism as like a sign of him being cowardly. I just thought like he wanted to really focus on how journalism as a force, as an art, as a medium can really affect how we and kind of interpret and engage with the world. Journalists being on the front line and journalism as this like almost this form of warfare themselves. And I was really loving kind of like this deconstruction of journalism. But every time he talks about it and every time I see more videos, I'm like, what are we doing?
Well,
what are we doing?
A part of what he said about how he liked this old-fashioned form of journalism, he also said that he kind of wanted the film to be a beacon of that. He like Kirsten Dunst's line as Lee in the film, she says, we, you know, take the pictures and we let other people come to conclusions. Otherwise, you know, you get too in the thick of things. I think that's what he wanted to accomplish with the film. But on my second watch, I also kind of noticed that it was even less apolitical than I thought, because the first time around I was like, is Nick Offerman's president kind of like a Trump stand-in? Mm-hmm. When I watched it again, I was like, how can it not be?
How can it not be?
He's saying Trumpisms in the opening line. He's wearing a red tie. He's a fascist president. He's celebrating military victories. They're shooting journalists on
they
site.
Shoot journalists on site in the Capitol.
It's true.
As Stephen McKinley Henderson said, which
he's
is
on
you
his
know,
third term, you know, and there's already been like discussions in the real world about how like, oh, you know, certain people who are big Donald Trump supporters are like, yeah, let's get a third term for this president.
Yes.
You're very exactly. right. It's like there is no denying that I think this movie is inherently trying to take very real politics from the world and apply them to this quote unquote dystopian movie. I think it's impossible to say the movie is quote unquote apolitical. Right. There's clearly, even if it's a bare bones kind of shallow politics, there is.
Well, but even look at the scene with Jesse Plemons where they're really given like white supremacist skinhead energy. They shoot the guy the second he says he's from China. I mean, it's maybe he isn't making it super clear exactly what he thinks. that's what is so strange about it, is it's like, okay, like Antifa massacre, we don't like China. Like, I don't understand what this like amalgam is of all of these things. I know Antifa massacre, everyone's like, so did they do the massacre?
Were they massacred? Well, it definitely feels like it feels like a movie written by somebody on the outside looking in.
True.
You know, someone who is not experiencing everyday life during, you know, the last 4 years of the 2020s. And, you know, that's used as a vehicle to, as what he said, to kind of focus on the importance of journalism. And I kind of just wish, I like the movie, but I do wish there was more discussion on how journalism can affect the reality of a world like this. I mean, because, you know, journalism in the last 4 or 5 years has also been under attack. I think that's such a much more interesting thesis for this movie to tackle. And I'm kind of surprised he like tries to play this balancing act of like journalism and politics, because I feel like he could have really done something interesting with it.
I think another conclusion I came to on my second watch was that I don't love the ending. I'm curious to get your thoughts on that, because I really like the movie up until the last like 25-30 minutes, because it is just like this really harrowing road trip through this dystopian America, and it's like a road trip film. But then we get this like big explosive finale as they're going into the White House, and I think it becomes a little silly, especially, I mean, I don't know what journalists, what war journalists actually do, but I think a lot of people are having issues with the way it's presented. They are like literally right in the thick of things, and the soldiers are like accommodating them in their effort to like take pictures literally while they're trying to find and assassinate the president. And I think it just gets like a little bit silly at the end. And I was like, I feel like that's introducing something really big, where I liked the smaller moments and conversations about what they actually do while they were just on the road, you know?
Interesting. You know, the idea that these journalists are kind of the first into the White House, they're kind of, in a way, they're almost the ones leading the charge to the president and not the military, which that's the part I find a little not funny, but I do find it a little bit unrealistic in the way that, like, the whole movie, they're really kind of playing second fiddle to the military. They're tagging along. They're really there to capture what is happening. And then you get that the entire movie and until the very end. And now they're in the White House. You know, they're the first ones in, and they're kind of leading the charge to find the president. And then the military really feels like they're helping them. And I don't know if that bothers me or if I just haven't really thought about it, if I'm being honest. There could be a way to interpret that. Does it bother you that they kill the president at the end?
No, it doesn't bother me at all. But I think a really important moment at the end that people are, because people are talking about how exactly this film portrays journalists at the end of the day. And when they're finally in the room with the president, you get the moment where the military is about to kill him, and Wagner Moura tells them to wait and wait and wait because he needs a quote. And you get this, maybe my favorite part of the film, this dynamic between Kaylee Spaney's character Jesse and Lee, the older journalist, and how Jesse is kind of like, she feels like she's looking at a younger version of herself. And how Jesse kind of falls into that obsession of getting the perfect shot. Like, that's this theme, like they do anything to get the shot. And so a lot of people are saying that they kind of end up all looking like sociopaths at the end of the day, because look at how Kaylee Spaney, like, you know, lead. And there's this question, like, would you take a picture of me when I died?
Yeah.
But here's I'm going to unpack this theory I came up with while I was watching it. I'll try to do it quickly.
Let's hear it.
So there's one scene in the film. It's where it's after Stephen McKinley Henderson's character dies. So sad. Jesse has experienced maybe the most horrific thing in the film when she falls into that pit of bodies and has to like climb out of it. You get this scene where all the audio is removed. She's like throwing up. Everyone's screaming and crying. It's terrible. And Stephen McKinley Henderson dies, someone who was really important to Kirsten Dunst's character. And she actually took a picture of him after he died. And I think such an important moment is when we see her look at the picture of him and she decides to delete it. And then we get a conversation between her and Jesse. And through the whole film, I noticed that Lee was wearing dark colors and Jesse was wearing light colors. But after this happens to them, Lee is wearing a white shirt and Jesse's wearing a dark shirt. And that's kind of the turning point where we see Jesse become obsessed and kind of fall into it a lot. And Lee kind of takes this new route, and it feels, you know, she deletes the picture of her friend, but Jesse takes the picture of Lee as she's dying. So it is kind of this cycle of like, Lee was really in the trenches and she was really obsessed with it and kind of prioritized it over everything else. But then she makes this ultimate sacrifice for Jesse, the next generation of journalists. So it's kind of like, is that what he was trying to say? This is their job. Like, they truly need to prioritize getting that information and getting that image over everything.
There's this tension that the journalists are competing with one another to capture the news and the perfect shot. And like, there's also some commentary to be said about that. Like, they've almost, in a way, commodified their own world. Like, they're all racing to DC to capture the death of the president, which is dark in itself, but they treat it as like this nonchalant, no big deal thing. But also I do love the kind of idea that this movie is kicking around, that journalism is, not that it's dangerous, but like, there is like this darker side to it, that you have to become almost less human to kind of do the job. And I like the idea that Jesse, this very young, you know, up and coming photojournalist, is obsessed with the old. And like, you kind of get that idea just from the way she, you know, interacts with Kirsten Dunst. But also, I find it really interesting that she uses like a film camera, like an old school film camera. Yep. And Kirsten Dunst uses like a more modern DSLR, more digital. In so many ways, it really is like this passing of the torch, like this almost necessary cycle of evil that journalists have to come to terms with in order to do the job. I find that so much more interesting in this movie than like this boring conversation of you know, left and right in politics and kind of stances the movie's willing or unwilling to take. I like it so much more as like, what do journalists need to do to ensure that the truth is captured?
Exactly. Like the life cycle of a journalist. Because we see three generations of them. And then Wagner Moura is just like, yeah, let's go. Like, he's just like in it for the adrenaline rush, it seems like.
Well, like even his character is interesting. I mean, the ability to kind of remove yourself and move on. I mean, we know from, you know, from the beginning of the movie, he clearly has a very long relationship with Kirsten Dunst's character, mm-hmm. Lee, and with Stephen McKinley Henderson's character, Sammy, I think his name is Sammy, right?
Yeah, Sammy.
Sammy, so he's clearly very close to all these people, and he has these moments where he erupts in emotion when his fellow journalists die. But, you know, even at the end, when Lee sacrifices herself for Jesse, like, he doesn't stop to, you know, grieve or to console Jesse. He moves on because what is important to him is getting to the president and getting his quote. Like, that ability to kind of have to make yourself less human and kind of lose any ounce of remorse or soul and kind of let the coldness take you over, it's scary. And I think the movie does a decent job at kind of tackling that, but I almost wish there was more of a focus on that, because that makes an interesting movie.
Yeah, but I think it's there, you know?
I think so,
in the
too.
Whole movie, right alongside soldiers, like, they're using, you know, their camera as the weapon. And I think people are kind of discounting the ways in which Alex Garland is trying to explore the role of a journalist. I mean, whether you agree or disagree with his portrayal and with his thoughts on it is another thing. But I do feel like, I mean, you know, I try to understand that people might disagree with the film foundationally, but I see a lot of like moralizing happening with the people who really hate the film. I'm like, you know, he didn't murder anyone. The guy's just like from the UK.
He's just British, guys.
It's not a fucking Polanski film. Like, I will say my favorite praise of the film I have seen detailed it as a critique of American exceptionalism, and my favorite detractor was Matt Lynch, who said, like, basically, why are we worried about the politics of it? The idea is just super stupid.
I mean, yeah, some people just don't vibe with it on any level, like,
right,
you know, regardless of what it's trying to say politically or not trying to say. Some people just like don't think it's even worthy of its foundational premise,
right? Which is fair. I mean, we've all seen movies like that where we just are like, this just doesn't taste good. Like,
yeah. I mean, that's fine. That's totally fine. That happens all the time. A question that you and I both had for each other: is Kaylee Spaney the next superstar?
Dude, she's going to be big. Like, I know, I was going to ask you, like, it's not like she just started acting, but, you know, she was in Priscilla. She was in this. She's really good. She's going to be an alien Romulus. The year of Kaylee Spaney. I think she is going to be a superstar. I just saw her get fan cast as Link.
I'm okay with it.
I'm okay with it.
How big are we thinking? Does Kaylee Spaney join the MCU?
Oh, I hope not.
I say she does. I say in the next 5 years, Kaylee Spaney will either be in the MCU or the DCEU.
Is she the asterisk in Thunderbolts?
Maybe.
Kaylee Spaney cameo. I haven't watched her in a lot of interviews, and I'm kind of curious about what her personality is like, because I see her maybe as like a Florence Pugh type actress. Mm. But I think people like Florence Pugh because she's just so goddamn charming.
Yeah. A little goofy, a little out there.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, what she did in Priscilla was really good.
I mean, people were saying like Oscar nom for Priscilla, which I wasn't like totally on. I was on board for it for sure. Yeah. I wasn't not on board for it. But this year with Civil War, I think that even if you don't like the movie, many people are acknowledging like, you know, Kaylee Spaney is a force to be reckoned with. Alien Romulus, you know, if she can pull off a Sigourney Weaver-esque performance, mm-hmm. I mean, it's unfair to compare her, to compare anybody to Sigourney Weaver in Aliens, but like that is clearly the type of role she's preparing for.
Yeah.
If she pulls it off and if that movie ends up being good, someone will scoop her up and throw her into a franchise. Whether or not she.
Well, that's the franchise.
Yeah, but.
It's the goddamn Alien franchise.
I don't think so. The Alien
it's
franchise.
It's going to make a billion.
What? What are we talking about right now? Alien Romulus?
Yeah.
What? What kind of alien fan are you?
What kind of American are you?
Dude, it's the Alien franchise. People love Alien.
Alien has never made a billion ever. Not even when Ridley Scott or James Cameron had it.
All right, sorry for being an optimist.
No, you know what? I love that about you. I love that you think the Alien franchise could make a billy. My thing is that like the Alien franchise historically has liked to switch up directors. You know, Ridley Scott's done it. James Cameron's done it. David Fincher's done it. Now Fede Alvarez is doing it. I just get the vibe that they would just change up the director. And I don't know if they're going to try to keep like continuity. I don't know. I don't know what the plans are.
Well, and it could be alienating because Fede Alvarez, he takes an R rating very seriously.
Very, we know that for sure. For sure. I wonder if it's going to be, if that franchise will kind of mirror the Predator franchise in which that like, there is no, right now there's like a Prey. They're making another one. Allegedly, they're making a Prey 2. So, like, will they make an Alien Romulus 2 or just do, like, another Alien movie but, you know, different timeline or different reality or a different crew? Like, that's my kind of my inkling, what I think what they might do.
Interesting. Anyways, I don't know.
I regardless of what happens, I think she will be big. I think that if she nails Alien Romulus, her future is, the oyster is open. What are they? What, the world's
bright.
Her oyster?
The world is her oyster.
I don't eat
the
oysters.
The future is oyster.
The future is oyster. I honestly think that like at that point, whether or not she joins a big franchise is just up to her. You know, and I'm cool, yeah. Whatever. Florence Pugh is in the MCU. Zendaya is in the MCU. True. Sweeney was in Marvel movie, not the MCU. She probably thought she was in the MCU, but she was in a... in a Marvel movie. I don't think that the MCU is like a death sentence as some people like to believe. I would not be surprised if she gets gulped up soon. We'll see.
Yeah. Okay. That's
okay. Fair. Future of Alex Garland.
Yeah, let's talk about Alex Garland. Future of is he retiring?
I don't know. He said there was that biggest, you know, statement that came out, the headline that said, "I'm done. I've lost.
Put himself in director's jail before anyone else could."
He did. He put himself in director's jail before anybody else could put him in director's jail. But then I thought I saw like a clarification statement where he was like, "No. I don't want to quit filmmaking, but maybe he does take a back seat to like." Writing more or like takes a more time with his movies. I mean, Men came out like not even 2 years ago and then we're getting Civil War now.
I do think he clarified, I haven't fallen out of filmmaking. Fallen out of love with filmmaking. Maybe just a bit of a change. But there's a question that I had for you. Do you think he's a better writer or director?
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough. Because like... why people don't like Civil War, I don't think it's because of the direction. I think he's actually pretty good as a director in Civil War. I mean, there's a lot of really intense moments. You know, that Jesse Plemons scene is incredibly well-paced and, like, well-shot. I love the way he uses some of those, like, lenses. That blurry lens is really popular this year.
It is. I think sometimes it can Godzilla. Be a lot. Yeah, it was like every... I thought they overdid it.
In this movie or in Kong?
In Kong. In this movie, I thought it was good. I think it...
Kong may do overdo it a bit, but he's having fun with the lens, and I'm digging it, at least.
He's not a super, like, you know, frilly director.
No.
But I think he has really strong images.
I think he has strong images as well. I like the moments in this movie where it kind of, it cuts to the photos that they're taking and like the audio kind of cuts out for a second.
Yeah.
I really like those decisions and I like those scenes. But historically as a writer, he has been good. I'm a big 28 Days Later guy. I like Dread. I like Sunshine. I think he wrote that as well, if I remember correctly. You know, so I think he's had more hit as a writer, but that's just because he's written more. I don't know. I don't know if there's an answer if I like him more as a writer or as a director. I lean towards writer, but I don't dislike him as a director. How about you?
I'm taking your word as Bible because I've not seen nearly enough of what he's written. I've seen everything he's directed, and I think he's a decent director. But I think I feel like most people would say he's a better writer. Maybe his writing has been more elevated by other directors in the past.
Very fair. I also think that like out of his four films, there's only one with like overwhelmingly consensus, positive, we love it, this is the best.
Ex Machina?
Ex Machina is for sure like...
Yeah, interesting, because I almost think I like Annihilation more.
And you wouldn't be alone in that feeling. I think there are Annihilation truthers out there and loyalists out there. I just think like when you kind of ask somebody, look at these four movies, what's the one that you gravitate towards first or the most? Like 9 times out of 10, people will say Ex Machina.
Ex Machina.
That is kind of like the one people will mostly agree on.
How would
Annihilation
you rank them?
As well. How would I rank them?
Yeah.
Damn. I knew you were going to ask this and I still didn't prepare myself for it. I would probably go Ex Machina, Annihilation, Civil War, Men is how I would rank
Okay.
mine. You?
I think I would go Annihilation. Wait, what did you put first?
Ex Machina.
Okay, yeah. I would say Annihilation, Ex Machina, Civil War, Men. But I haven't watched Ex Machina in a few years. I want to revisit it. I don't know why I wasn't like super blown away when I watched it. But Annihilation, I do think, is like a cool movie. I like kind of the adventure horror aspect to it.
The cosmic horror to all of it. Annihilation, I think, rips pretty hard, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, it's a really spooky movie.
It is spooky.
Really
spooky. It's got
spooky
some good stuff to it.
Think about.
All right.
But yeah,
so,
Men is definitely last.
As a writer, so you're leaning towards writer than director then?
Yeah, probably.
I know we've kind of moved on from the movie a bit, but just to circle back to the movie, is there any specific scene in Civil War that like really, really works for you?
Ooh, good question. Because there are a lot of great scenes. I think I do like the scene with Jesse Plemons a lot. Mm. I mean, I think it just works as
what
something
kind of
that's
American
like
just like hitting that button.
It's just like tense as hell.
And
I'm trying to think like what other. I do think that the climax is like well executed as just like a really in your face war zone.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, is it IMAX at the Chinese theater?
It is IMAX. It is Dolby. It is it's IMAX, but it's loud as hell. And I will say, I've jumped more watching Civil War than I have watching any horror movie in 2024
really?
So far. Yeah.
Get this guy in front of Smile.
We saw Smile together.
I think I was the one who was jumping.
I jumped a bit. I am a jumper. I do tend to jump at jump scares. Even when I'm kind of anticipating it, I still jump. But there's a few in this movie where it's just like a hard cut to certain gunshots and scenes where I was like, whoa, was not ready for that. And especially in IMAX and Dolby, it's a lot louder. I do love the Jesse Plemons scene a lot. I'm a big fan of that. You know what scene I really like that I feel like no one's talking about?
Is it the one where they go to the, in the morning, they go to the shootout?
I like that scene a lot as well, but that is not the scene I was referencing.
Oh, which one?
I really like the scene where they pull up to like that Christmas kind of presentation area. And they're kind of wondering whether or not they should cross it because they see a dead body. And then they start to, and they get shot out by the sniper. And so they have to stop. And you get that really, really tense moment of like two snipers, you know, facing off. And you get that moment where Wagner Moura says like, who is it? And they're like, we don't know. We just know that they're shooting at us. And like, I think that is a really fun scene. You get this like moment where Lee is disassociating kind of with the entire...
With the flowers. flowers.
With the flowers and like not paying attention and kind of just like laying there, using this like moment of intense violence as a moment to take a break, which I think is really telling to how her as a spirit has really kind of crumbled because of all of the war she's encountered. I love that scene. I think that scene's great.
Wow. I know, talking about this, I'm really starting to appreciate, like, especially Lee as a character.
Yeah.
Man, I just, every single moment that Kirsten Dunst is talking in this movie, she's so good.
She is great. I mean, it's Kirsten Dunst. I mean, it's Kirsten,
I know, she's, I know. Old news, great. But I just, she just kind of, I think, like, using her age. I don't know if you saw that tweet that was like, I feel like I haven't seen a woman like 40 or older. People are responding to that tweet in such an annoying way because it's low-key true. Like, you don't see a lot of actresses who are legitimately older than 40 leading films like this, but I think it utilizes her age really well to just show her as this really, like, war-torn, just, like, she's just, like, tired as fuck, dude.
Yeah, that tweet worded poorly. I think the intention is there.
They set themselves up a little bit.
They set themselves up pretty badly. I think the sentiment makes sense. I mean, sadly, I feel like actresses over 40 are getting less and less roles. Clearly, they are getting roles, and there's fantastic actresses over 40 doing great things. But I think, generally speaking, those roles are not being created for them, which I think is what the tweet was trying to say.
Yeah, I think it is what they were trying to say. But yeah, I just think, I don't know, she's such a great character, and I do like all those moments, like when she tries on the dress, when they go to that town.
Oh, I love that scene as well.
Sees herself in the mirror, and yeah, when she kind of has to mourn Sammy, and yeah, it all leads up to that sacrifice that she makes, and it is like her whole life she's kind of been sacrificing her own humanity, as you said earlier. Yeah, I love that moment with the flowers. That might be like my favorite moment in the movie.
I like it a lot. I know this is going to sound a little silly. We've blamed the MCU for a lot of things in the movie world as of recently.
It's an awesome lead-in to whatever you're about to say.
But I have to ask you.
Rent-free, Joe, rent-free.
I have to ask. Were people in your theater, I heard this from a few people, but were people in your theater like cheering and clapping when Sammy saves the group from the military?
So glad you brought this up, because yes, there were some people who did a little like woo and like clapped. People laughed when Lee died.
What?
But I couldn't. So I saw it with two friends my second time, and they, one of my friends laughed, and I was like, we're not friends anymore. But what they told me after was that they laughed because there was a woman in the theater who, once Lee got shot, she just went, damn. I guess it made everyone in the theater laugh. But I didn't hear it for whatever reason. I was like too locked in, I guess. But
too busy eating your churro popcorn. You can't hear the people around you.
I got a cookie shake. I only
had got it.
But yeah, some of it was just like weird vibes. Like, people did not react how I was expecting them to.
Well, I bring this up because when I watched it at the press screening at TCL, when Stephen McKinley's character, Sammy, does save them from the military in that scene, way too many people for my liking were like cheering and kind of hooping and hollering. And this is why I'm bringing up the MCU. I'm like, is this the MCU's consequences? Like, is this what happens? Like, we get to a point where in movies that there needs to be nothing like that happening, but, you know, a character saves somebody, we're getting cheer moments. Why is this happening? Why do audiences feel like this is okay?
I mean, it is. I mean, people love Stephen McKinley Henderson. So do I.
So do I. But I'm not going to, like, this. That was a very dark scene.
I mean,
it's
a really dark scene. I think that's what it is. I mean, we experience that so much at South by Southwest. And it's obviously a different environment. But still, it's like you're not taking the movie seriously.
I don't know what it is, you know, and audience interruptions and interjections, they exist forever. I mean, I've been to movies for the last 25 years of my life, and that people say shit during movies all the time. That I'm not saying that, but there just seems to be like this weird collective, like, let's cheer when good things happen. And I'm like, time and place, people. This isn't the movie.
It's not like a theme park. Yeah.
No, it's not a theme
park. It is. It's Martin Scorsese. He cooked.
Martin Scorsese cooked. And I know people were upset by that, but he cooked. He cooked.
Yeah. So that's weird.
Okay. The movie has made $25 million over the weekend. Good amount of money. Really according good. To Wikipedia, the budget is $50 million. I think this movie needs a break, like 100-ish or so, for it to be actually profitable after you kind of consider all the marketing budget. My question to you, Sid, we've done this in the past. I think I've been better at this than you have, if I'm being honest. Where does Civil War end up after its theatrical run?
I know I'm not good at this.
On that note, if I remember correctly from Madam Web, I said it would make less than $100 million. You said it would make more. Do we want to check what the current Madam Web...
Yeah, fine. Well, I'm fine with losing.
I don't want to say current because it's
I said it would make
theaters.
More than 100.
You said more. Let's find out. Okay, I'm pulling up Madam Web.
100.3.
No way. 100.3 worldwide. You fucking snuck by with the 0.3.
Just barely.
It made more internationally, which is not uncommon, but it made $56 million internationally, $43 domestically. Wow.
We'll call that a tie.
Sure. Oh, sure. We'll call that a tie. Sure.
I'll give you that one.
Okay. Civil War, where does it end up at the end of its theatrical run? What do you think?
Let's see. Okay. So we're at $25.7 million. I think it makes, if I say like $250,000, is that stupid?
Wait, it's already made $25 million. What do you mean?
I mean $250 million.
Yeah, you would. That would be a crazy.
Okay, I think it makes $150 million.
That's a good guess. I think that's a great guess. $150 million. I think at the end of the day, this movie will make. I'll say $135 million.
Okay.
$135 million. I think that's where it'll land. For perspective. I think this is a really good comparison. Maybe from some good context, you may change your answer. The 10 highest grossing A24 movies.
Oh.
Worldwide. Can you guess? Let's hear some guesses. Let's go.
Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Number one, Everything Everywhere All at Once. What do you think the worldwide box office pull on that was?
That must have been a little over 200. Was it more? I have no idea.
Everything Everywhere All at Once made $111 million worldwide.
I don't know what the fuck's going on.
Now, with that being said, this is kind of why I want to pull this context. That movie, I think, had incredible word of mouth. Like, I feel like that movie, people were talking about that movie for months.
It won Best Picture.
Yeah, yeah. With that comparison, does Civil War make more than Everything Everywhere All at Once?
Maybe not.
That does concern me.
I think Civil War, there's like less urgency. Everything Everywhere All at Once was kind of like, you have to see this now. It's like this
exactly.
big thing.
Exactly.
Civil War, it's like, maybe I don't need to see it right away.
And it's a decent comparison. I mean, both movies are rated R. I believe Everything Everywhere All at Once is rated R, right? There's dildos and shit in it.
Yeah, it should be.
Okay. If that movie, which, you know, is a movie that you said the urgency behind watching Everything Everywhere All at Once was sky high, I don't know if Civil War can pass 111. You know, it does, but it does have more of a, I think, pull with general populations. Like, trying to convince regular moviegoers to go maybe once every month, maybe once every 2 months to go see a movie about multiversal time travel and like kung fu romance sci-fi movie, it's a harder sell than like, how about some Civil War, you know, like we can go see this movie.
What
you know?
Kind of American are you?
Like that's your selling point. I think there's more of a selling point with Civil War, but whether or not it works is a different story.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what else is Uncut Gems on the list.
Uncut Gems, number 7 at $50 million. According to thenumbers.com, there was no international release for Uncut Gems. So $50 million only at the domestic.
All right. How about Midsommar?
Midsommar at number 8, $46 million worldwide.
All right, show me Lady Bird.
Lady Bird at number 4. $80 million worldwide. You're currently missing 2, 3, 5, 6, and 9, and 10.
I'm guessing top 10?
Top 10.
All right, show me Moonlight.
Moonlight at number 5, $64 million. Nice job.
All right, show me. Show me Hereditary.
Hereditary number 3, $81 million. Currently, you're missing number 2, number 6, number 9, number 10.
Wow, Ari Aster. It's just carrying A24 on his back.
Beau's Afraid is not on this list. I'll let you know that now.
And it shouldn't be.
Whoa.
I said Lady Bird, right? Yeah.
You did?
If justice was served, First Reformed would be on there, but I'm going to
guess it's not on there. Nope.
Show me The Witch.
The Witch at number 10.
The Vivitch.
Number 10, $40 million and some change.
What am I missing?
Number 9, number 6, and number 2.
Show me Eighth Grade.
Eighth Grade? Not on there. Eighth Grade is not here. So sorry.
I'm looking at like incomplete lists of A24 movies.
I will say this. Number 2 and number 9 are two movies that came out last year.
Is it After Sun? No. I know, but it should be.
After Sun was also 2022, whatever. Not 2023.
Oh, the Iron Claw.
Iron Claw.
Dude, I forgot
number
that was 24. Oh, good 42 for that.
And a half. 42 and some change. Million
Is it
dollars.
Bodies?
Stop. Bodies. So sorry.
Is it Talk to Me?
Talk to Me at number 2. $92 million
deserved
at the worldwide box office. That means you're only missing number 6, which honestly, what?
Is it like Pearl?
No, it is not Pearl. Not Pearl.
Love Lies Bleeding?
No.
Oh, bro.
What are you?
This guy stinks.
Which one am I missing? 6?
Number 6 is actually The Whale with $54 million.
Oh, brother, this guy stinks. I would never have guessed that. I'm glad
I know.
You said
that's
it.
Why I had to say it because I knew you were going to go through like
you
all
should,
the other ones.
You should map on the sound that he makes when he dies.
I'm so glad you're not a big fan of The Whale because I
really did not like it.
Was not a fan at all.
Brendan Fraser, I love you, but.
I know. Love the man to death, but was not a fan of The Whale. All right.
All right. Here's a question I have.
Let's hear it.
So on the Patreon, when we were talking about Event Horizon, I brought up Joe has a series on TikTok about twin films, and I brought up evil twin films, films that are about kind of the same thing but take opposite stances. Is the evil twin film to Civil War Nightcrawler?
So I've seen a lot of Nightcrawler comparisons.
Because people are saying that they're similar. Which just speaks to the epic catastrophe of Alex Garland's messaging in this movie.
Seriously, I mean, I'm so glad we talked about artist intent versus audience interpretation. Because this is maybe the prime example of a director making a movie with certain intentions and like the wild interpretations across the spectrum is so varied. I get the comparison to Nightcrawler. For those, just in case you don't know, is a movie about a journalist who kind of goes to extreme measures to capture content, essentially. That movie is, I think, a hyper-focus. Like, that is clearly what it's trying to do, and I think it's very successful that. While this movie is like, maybe wants to do the same thing, but it's like, again, like I said, trying this balancing act of so many other things. And so it's less effective. I think Nightcrawler is a much more effective movie on kind of like what the human soul will do to kind of not only capture news. I think it's less about capturing news, but kind of being the spotlight.
Well, yeah, I think it is kind of, well, it's different. Like,
sorry, it was a long-winded answer, my bad.
No, I totally agree. And Nightcrawler is kind of more about kind of like tabloid news. And I do think it is what Alex Garland does not like. And he did intend to portray journalists as heroes, and being a war photographer is kind of on the complete opposite end of the spectrum of like working for TMZ.
Yeah, and the streets of LA.
Yeah, like Lou Bloom and Nightcrawler is getting to the point he's so sociopathic, he's like staging crime scenes mm-hmm. so that he can. So, you know, there's this question of just like all ethics are out the window.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's
a really cool comparison. I think the evil twin thing of Nightcrawler to Civil War, because, yeah, you know, so Nightcrawler is about journalism, but it's a very different type of journalism, like you said, like tabloid news. And Lou Bloom isn't out to kind of spread the truth to the world. He's not like capturing these images right. so that he can show the world like the underbelly of LA. His motivation is to get rich, to be famous. Like, that's a much different motivation than these people who are putting themselves on the line every day to capture, you know, for war journalism.
Right.
Interesting comparison.
Well, it's kind of like the loss of humanity in order to provide versus the loss of humanity in order to serve mm-hmm. oneself.
Yeah.
So,
interesting. I mean, there's overlap. There's overlap.
There is. I think it's funny that people are comparing the two.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. Well, we've reached the end on our discussion on Civil War. We're in the middle of April. April has been okay. How are you feeling about April?
I think April has been fine. It's interesting because there are a lot of films coming out now that we saw at South by Southwest. So I'm kind of like not feeling like they're coming out, but they are.
Yeah. So like Monkey Man, we loved.
Loved Monkey Man.
First Omen, you weren't there to talk about it with me and Clara, but I know
I
you liked
not.
It.
I did like it. And I honestly like, man, the first Omen is a situation where I can't believe it didn't make more money because people were just so over the moon about it. But yeah, it rocked. I think I almost rated it too low.
Oh, really? I haven't really checked on the First Omen box office. I know it made like 20-ish in its opening weekend, but has it kind of slowed down?
In the opening weekend? Wow.
So currently it sits at $35 million worldwide. It's been out for 10 days now. According to this website, opening weekend domestically was 8 and some change, and then worldwide was $14 million. Not a lot. Not a lot for a movie that is backed by a big studio.
Exactly. So go see the First Omen.
You like First Omen. You like Monkey Man. April has also brought us the greatest hits, everybody.
Yeah, the Joe's latest favorite rom-com. Movie ever.
Silent!
I love that movie. Leave me alone.
Hey, Joe.
What?
Thanks for setting this podcast on fire. Can you map that on? But don't include the part where he says, I don't know why I just said that. Because if you're going to be corny, at least commit.
All right. Anyways, I like The Greatest Hits. If you haven't seen that movie, I highly recommend it. If you have a heart or if you love love or and laughing and music.
Okay. You know, it's not getting great ratings. So I think
it's not. I'm the anomaly. I'm the anomaly. But you know what? I liked it. That movie came out on Hulu. Did you see The Beast? People talking about The Beast.
No, but man, Lea Seydoux has great taste in what she stars in. And it looks like kind of freaky. So
I know nothing about it. Little
Apparently
to nothing.
It's great.
Okay. Sting, the horror movie with the spider.
Mid.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
I mean, whatever.
I think you and I have made it clear we like creature features and horror movies with spiders, and it's just kind of a bummer this movie came out to be so mid.
There was some cool stuff.
Yeah.
So, but I think like the second half of April is going to be better. We're kind of at the midpoint right now. Fallout came out. Fallout is good.
You like Fallout? Have you been watching it?
Yeah, I like it. I don't love it, but it's good. I think it's good. I'm not super far in, so I don't want to make any judgments.
April 19th is the upcoming Friday of this episode. We're getting Abigail.
Yeah, I'm high. It's getting good reviews.
I'm really excited. My only fear with Abigail, if I'm being completely honest, I'm sure this will be our episode next week, by the way. I feel like the comedy is going to be so familiar that I'm going to like it. Like, I'm going to like it because it's a very familiar type of comedy.
Right.
But when does that get old?
I think that's a good question.
That's my fear. Like, it's just going to be like Ready or Not coded.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, you're bringing me down.
I'm excited regardless. Good cast. Yeah, I'm pumped. There's things to be excited
Melissa
about.
Melissa Barrera train.
Let's go. I love Melissa Barrera. The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare comes out that same day. You've seen this already.
Yeah, it was the AMC screen unseen last week.
Okay.
It was mid. And you know what? I was sad to make people... Everyone knows how big of a Guy Ritchie fan I am.
I know.
So, like, I gave it 2.5 stars, and that really meant something, because I've been on the front lines for this man. But he's just not... He needs to try harder.
He needs to take a break.
He needs to take a break, or he needs to go back to England and make movies.
Guy Ritchie, if you're listening right now, I love you. You've done great work. We love your movies. Take a break, man. You're making a movie, like 2 movies a year.
I know. He has another one going
on. He has another one. And have you read the fucking like synopsis for it?
No.
Oh my God. Let me pull it up for you.
It has Jake Gyllenhaal, though, which excites me.
It has a great cast. Here we go. In the Gray, new Guy Ritchie movie. I'm going to pull up the wiki right now. In the Gray is an upcoming action thriller movie written and directed by Guy Ritchie, starring Henry Cavill, Jake Gyllenhaal, and Isa Gonzalez. It's a good cast, right? Great cast. The plot synopsis that I read is like, In the Gray is about a group of people who work in the middle ground of crime and the law.
Oh, and it's literally called In the Gray.
In the Gray. That's why it's called In the Gray. But so this stupid. Is like every Guy Ritchie movie now. It's like, oh, we have this group of people. They're doing something that's illegal, but it's cool. And that is like the premise of every single Guy Ritchie movie. I mean, and I'm wondering, when do we stop?
Well, he doesn't have to. I think he's good at it. But it's they're getting progressively worse. No, I know. Justice for Operation Fortune. I actually thought that movie was fun.
Rue de Bear.
Ruse de Guerre.
Oh, Ruse de Guerre. What did I say? Rue de Bear?
Rue de Vega.
Rue Goldberg machine? I don't know.
But, I mean, and I like his Sherlock Holmes movies.
Okay.
I don't know. Like, I don't know what's going on. It's like is he having fun? Are we not having fun anymore?
I think the guy is doing too much. I don't know if he's like having legal battles right now, or like he's owes somebody money, but the guy is working so much, it's ridiculous.
It's
according to the wiki, he's doing In the Gray. It's in post-production already. Then he already has another movie that's filming called Fountain of Youth, which is has John Krasinski, Isa Gonzalez, Domhnall Gleeson. I don't know much about this one. Here's the premise. A pair of estranged siblings team up and embark on a journey to find the famed Fountain of Youth.
Okay.
The rumor for a long time was that he was also working on the Disney live action version of Hercules.
That's right.
I don't know if that's the case anymore, or if like he's just kind of, they're not working on it, or if he's not attached to it anymore. But according in June 2022, he was doing the Hercules movie.
Yeah, I just think it's not like he hasn't made any good movies recently.
No,
I honestly
not.
Liked The Covenant. I thought that was a little kind of a cool turn from him. I love The Gentleman. I think Wrath of Man kicks ass.
Yeah, I think that movie's decent too.
I've always said The Man from U.N.C.L.E. is really fun.
I've always said even bad Guy Ritchie movies are decent action movies.
Yeah.
But like if we're getting to a point where you're starting to give 2.5s to his movies, I do think we're at a point where like, let's step back for a second.
Yeah.
Let's see if you know what we want to do next. Take a break, dude.
That's what I'm saying is that it feels like he's not having fun because so many of his movies are so boisterous and like they have fun costume design and the editing is funky. But Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare felt like a straight to streaming movie the way it was shot. Like I was like, what is going
on?
It's
wild.
Here? Yeah.
2019, he had 2 movies come out, Aladdin and the Gentleman.
Oh, wow.
2021, Wrath of Man. 2023, 2 movies, Operation Fortune, Ruse de Guerre, Guy Ritchie's The Covenant. 2024, Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
Can you work in that short amount of time? Can you do good work in that short amount of time?
I don't know.
Maybe not.
I haven't seen it yet. I'll watch it this week and let you know how I feel about it.
Yeah,
I'm excited to watch
it
regardless.
Curious. I mean, it's charming. The cast is charming.
You know what other movie's coming out this Friday?
Sasquatch Sunset.
That is coming out, but that's not what I'm referencing.
Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver. Let's go.
Are we excited about it? So bad.
No, and because Rebel Moon Part 1, you know, the first hour of Rebel Moon Part 1, I really liked. Give me that.
Okay.
But I know people who have seen Rebel Moon Part 2, and they are Zack Snyder fans, and they said it was really bad.
Well, what's next for Zack Snyder?
Just let the man cut the movie the way he wants.
Just let him do the movie, Netflix. Anyways.
Just release. How are you guys? The whole we'll release the director's cut soon.
That makes me never want to watch the director's cut, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. So.
All right. That is the end of this episode
for
realsies.
We're not done saying April because Challengers is coming out this month. And that's the highlight of the month.
April 26th, we're getting Luca Guadagnino's Challengers.
Dude.
I'm seeing it on Saturday.
I know you're seeing it on Saturday. If you haven't heard, there is I think it's AMC, Regal. A lot of theater chains are doing an early screening for Challengers that Monday, the 22nd.
Yeah.
So check for tickets.
I've noticed that a lot of movies are doing this now where they have the big movies. You know, they'll have the release date of April 26th. Well, they'll do a fan only experience on the 20th, or an early showing for super fans or something like that. You know, they did it with Dune, they're doing it with the Challengers, they did it with Civil War. This is an increasingly common thing, and I really hope people are taking advantage of it.
I agree. I really like it. It kind of gets the conversation going, and it's fun to see things early. And
Reactions to Challengers have been wildly positive from many of the people I admire. I'm ready, man.
I'm so ready. I mean, the whole aesthetic of the movie, the press tour, apparently it's just bring back sexy movies. Luca Guadagnino knows how to do that.
He does.
I'm so excited.
You and I are big Bones and All fans. In Luca, I trust. I think he's one of the best doing it right now. I don't disagree.
He needs more appreciation.
All right. Challengers. That's the next big one. I'm so excited for Challengers. We'll have an episode on Challengers very, very soon, for sure. That'll be the last one of April. Okay. And then we're entering summer season.
Hell yeah, dude. Crazy lineup for the summer.
We'll talk about that in another episode. At this point, I think we need to come to a close. Everybody listening, thank you so much for listening. Check us out on Patreon. We have exclusive episodes and series over there on horror, on animation. We just do news episodes where we just kind of shoot the shit and talk about stuff. A lot of fun stuff to check out. If you cannot, don't worry. We will always have public episodes available every week, every Tuesday. Sydney, final words.
Check out Civil War.
Check out Civil War.
It's been really interesting to hear everyone's interpretations of it.
I agree.
And support films. Support the mid-budget thriller.
Yeah, when I made my video on Civil War, I made it very clear. I think that this is a movie that's worth watching simply because being part of the conversation, I think, is important.
Exactly.
It's easy to dismiss anything that you may not like, but give it a shot. And if you don't like it, that's fine. I think that's great.
Exactly.
It's healthy for the film world, I think. Mm-hmm. All right. Great. Everybody listening, thank you so much. Have a wonderful day, night, week, and weekend. And we'll see you guys next time.
Goodbye, listeners.
What kind of American are you?